You are listening to a podcast of the Geek.io Media Network. For all of our shows and more, visit geek-io.net. And to help support the network, head over to patreon.com/geek.io.
What is up, everybody? Welcome back to Life of an Accounting Droid, a very special episode at that. I'm your host, as always, Neil, bringing you episode number 52, the end of, or the last episode in the first year of the show. So I got quite a bit of a packed episode, so we'll have the usual theme in news. I'll have an app review and a feature review for this week. Bit of a teaser, the TV show review will be a season finale, and then I'll also have, for the Star Wars profile, the finale to the Brotherhood of Darkness, so a key instrument in how that came about in the Star Wars universe, or at least in the Star Wars Legacy universe. I didn't check if it was a legacy or canon tool or a canon power, but as far as I know, I would assume that it's a legacy feature of Star Wars, so there's that, so look out for that. And as well, and then as for the relaxing segment, the end of a using a particular character, so it all wraps around like that, so look out for that. But that is all later in the episode, so to start it off, I'll start with this episode's theme, and that is the useful life. That is what the estimated life to use an income-generating product in a business setting. So essentially what this does is it relates to how long a product can make money and not necessarily how long it will physically last. So even though you, for example, I built a computer back in 2001 and it was useful, or its useful life would have been 5 years because I built it to use for basically during my college years for my education. So its useful life was 5 years, but it actually ended up physically lasting almost, I want to say about 14, 15 years, probably about 14 years with various upgrades, repairs, and things like that. So while it physically lasted a lot longer than I expected it to, it was only useful for a select number of years because of its purpose and And while that's more of a personal use, it's not necessarily income generating. A similar thing can be used or is used in the determination for a business aspect. And things that factor into how long or how a useful life is calculated include things like frequently used, data purchased or acquired, environmental conditions, and things like that. And these factors are calculated into the calculation for depreciation. So whether it's straight line depreciation, so year over year you deduct how much, or if you expect that useful life, and there are rules for this, but for example, if you find the useful life is 5 years, then you'll take the purchase price of that equipment. So let's say the computer, you spent $1,000 of it, then you'll divide it, or you spent $1,000 on it, you'll divide it over the 5 years. So every year you'll deduct $200 out of the purchase price of that product, expense it out as depreciation expense. So at the end of 5 years, you will, on the record, say that after 5 years, a computer has officially served its purpose. And either if it's no longer usable, replace it with another product or continue to use it as a quote-unquote free product because it's no longer costing you any money to actually use. But it is still useful in generating revenue. There are other depreciation models, including accumulated depreciation. So you may factor in more usefulness early on in the life, and then later on, it's considerably less. So it's kind of like forward loading the expense of or the depreciation expense because you know that, let's say, in the first year equipment is more useful, but later on it's less useful. So you want to better match how much benefit you're getting out of it. And there are a lot of accounting rules as far as how depreciation is calculated, where you are, what kind of useful life is generally accepted, how much you can actually take, and things like that. So it all varies. But in the end, a useful life is how much money you can make off of something you've purchased, and is it being used in a business setting? So with that being said, I'll jump into this week's tech news. And to start it off, Google Maps and Google Earth got updated with sharper images. So if you notice that they look a lot, the images look a lot better, that is why. Google Play News Sedan got updated with the ability to set pages with accelerated mobile pages as default. So pages that are qualified for AMP or use AMP technology can be set as a default newsstand source. Amazon updated the Kindle app with a feature called Page Flip. This makes it easier to jump through a book as if you're holding a finger on a page. So let's say you're on page 30 and you need to jump back to the table of contents. You can, in this essence, from what I'm told or what I've read, that you can like flip back to the table of contents and flip back to where you were a lot more easily. This feature will be rolling out soon to Fire by devices including Kindles, and as well as Android and iOS apps. Facebook released two Chrome extensions this week. The first one is called Share to easily share a page to Facebook, as well as Save to easily save web pages to Facebook for later reading. So if you want to use Facebook as your source of saving articles, then that is now a lot more easily. Android N's official name was released this week, and it is Nougat. So in case you're wondering what the N name is going to be, there is that. So images are already up, I believe, on the Android website, so with the statue and all of that good stuff, so definitely check it out. Google Maps for Android got an update this week to now add the ability to select multiple destinations in your route. So if you know that you're going to be making multiple stops, you can set your start destination as well as your other as many other destinations as you want to set. So you can test that out. I haven't tried it myself, but it looks like a pretty nifty feature if you need to set multiple destinations. Amazon will be bringing back Prime Day for in July, so if you want to check out a lot of the deals that much like they did last year, then you can see those. It's actually going to be for a week, not just a day, so it's going to be July 5th through 12th with around 100,000 deals. But I think from what I gather, the biggest deals will happen on July 12th, but you'll see various promotions and deals throughout that week. For those of you who want to easily get earthquake information, Google added the ability to find earthquake information just by doing a search. So you can search for earthquake or earthquakes near me, and you'll be able to get that earthquake information very easily. So if you want to check if that earthquake happened near you, or if you thought it was an earthquake and want to find out, or if you just want to see recent earthquakes, it will become a lot easier. And finally, MSN for Windows 10 and Windows 10 Mobile now let users customize their news sources, so you'll get a list of various sources and you can get more personalized content or get news that is more for what you want to see in the MSN app. So that is all for that. So with that, I'll jump into this week's app review. And in this case, I'm reviewing an app called 7-Minute Workout. So it's summertime, so you want to exercise, but you may not have the time, or you want to have a quick workout in the morning or in the evening just because you don't have the time to go to the gym, or you woke up late and you want to get something in before you go to work or at the end of the day. So that's kind of where 7-Minute Workout comes in. It's an app for Android, and what it does is it lets you do 13 different exercises at 30 seconds each with 10-minute intervals, so you get a total of a 7-minute workout. The good thing about this is that it's twofold. You can adjust those time intervals. So if you want more exercise time and more rest time in between exercises, or if you want a short exercise time and more break, then you can customize that. So 10 to 30 second, as far as I can tell, 10 to 30 or 10 to 60 second exercise times, and the same amount of interval for a break. So you can adjust it based on your abilities, time you have, time you want to spend on the exercises and breaks, or just how much break you might need between exercises. And to use the app, all you really need is a chair and a wall. So a sturdy chair to do the chair stand. So lift your stand up on the chair, then get off. So it's always useful to have a chair you can easily get on top of. So if you have a stool, that's easier, then there's that as well. And then a wall to do the sitting position for one of the exercises. The thing I liked as well is that it allows you to sync with Google Fit, so that way all your data is synced there, so if you want to keep track over time, you can check all that and combine that with any number of steps you take, or if you also do running or bicycling or other exercises, it all syncs to Google Fit as well. It is available in Google Play for free. If you want to get rid of ads, then you can pay the, I think it was $0.99 or $1.99. So not too bad, and it is worth it. And it's basically just a quick way to get a workout in. They do claim that it helps with reducing weight and your stomach and things like that. So I'm not going to make any claims as to the benefit or regimen and abilities and things like that. But I will say that, like, for me, I did try it once, and it was too fast to do the 30-second workouts and 10-second intervals. So it might help to start at a high interval, so maybe 60 seconds and 60 seconds. So 60 seconds for a workout, 60 seconds break. And if you find that it's too slow, then maybe 60-second exercise and 30-second break, or 30-second exercise and 30-second breaks, things like that. So it's always helpful to mix it up a little bit, see what you can do, can't do, do only the exercises you want to. So the other thing is, while you're doing it, if you want to skip an exercise, you can always skip over it. Or if you don't have a chair, for example, and you want to skip that, you can do skip that as well. So just a way to get some exercising in, get your heart rate up, and get some motion. So that 7-minute workout, it's available for Android in the Google Play Store. So with that, I'll jump into this week's feature review. And it's actually an update that I got recently, so I've been playing around with it a little bit and actually rather like it. And that's the updated widget for Google Fit. So one of the things that I've liked a lot for Google Fit is that it counts my steps. All I need is my phone to stay in my pocket, and I'll count the number of steps I've taken in the day as long as my phone's in my pocket. Not necessarily at work, I don't keep it in my pocket, but throughout the rest of the day when I'm, you know, walking around the house or at the gym, things like that, then I've got my steps being counted. But the one thing I did not like was that the widget only showed the number of minutes I walked, and I wanted to actually customize it to show the number of steps. So the recent update to version 1.57.51-106 adds that ability to customize your widget and tailor your goals to more easily see those on the go. So once you've updated to the latest version, what you'll do is you'll open Google Fit and click on the plus sign and select Add Goal. And you can either select a predefined goal, so a number of steps or time or things like that. I just kept it at the default, take 10,000 steps, but you can adjust that. So if you want 8,000 or 12,000 or more or less, you can select the number of your own number of steps and then set the goal. Once you've set that, you'll also select the frequency. So let's say you want to just, you don't really want a day-to-day goal because you know that some days you walk more, some days you walk less. So let's say you want to set it to a monthly goal, so you know that every month you want to walk. Let's say I'll take the 10,000 steps a day, 70. So you want to take 280,000 steps in a month. So you can set that as a goal, and you can see just in general as an overview that, okay, well, so far in the month I've taken this many steps, or if you want to do it every week, you can do that. Once you've set that goal, you'll go to your home screen and start creating a widget. It might vary by device. So for me, I hold down on my home screen and deselect add or select widgets. I'll scroll to the Google Fit widget and I'll drag it to my home screen. And then if you have multiple goals, then you can pick the one that you want to show on that widget. If you only have one, you'll pick the one that you see. And that's it. So now you can see your goals on your home screen. And in this case, you'll see the number of steps you've taken so far, and you can see your progress throughout the day. And the benefit now with this new widget is you can have multiple goals set on your home screen. So let's say you want to see your number of steps and the amount of minutes you walked in a day compared to your goal. You can have two Google Fit widgets, one for steps, one for time, and you'll see the total for each one. So you're all set and you have both measurements on your home screen and at a glance as well. So that's all there is for that. So Google Fit is available in the Google Play Store for free, so definitely worth a checkout. Even if you don't use the widgets, it's worth having to count your number of steps. Especially for like me, I can't really afford the smartwatch that I want, so, and I don't really have the need to buy a smartwatch at the moment, so this is another way to count your steps, and as long as your phone's in your pocket, you'll always have a way to count your steps. So that's Google Fit, made by Google, available for Android. I'm not sure if it's available for iOS, but it's definitely available for Android users. So that's all there is for that. So after the short break, I'll jump into this week's entertainment segment. So for this week's entertainment segment, not too much going on. I had a chance to watch a couple of different things, only a couple of news items. For the review, it'll be a TV show review. It'll probably be pretty obvious which one it is, especially if you've seen my last few posts on Instagram, so there is that. And then I'll round out the segment with this week's Star Wars profile, and then we'll have the last segment. That'll be that. So as far as the news for this week, Batman v Superman Ultimate Edition was released this week via digital media, so I know it's available on Amazon Video and Google Play, so I'm sure it's also available in iTunes. You can buy the theatrical version or the extended version, or I think as a bundle as well. The extended version has about 30 minutes worth of additional content, so from what I've read on reviews online, that additional content fixes a bunch of holes that people had in the film, so I haven't had a chance to watch all of it yet, or actually watch it at all to provide a proper review of it, but I plan to watch it and see how different it is. The Blu-ray version is coming July 19th, so if you want a physical copy, you'll have to wait a little bit. And finally, Preacher was renewed for a second season on AMC, so if you're liking the first episode or the first season based on the comic, then look out for that coming in 2017. On that note, for what I watched this week, I had a chance to continue watching Preacher. I saw season 1, episode 5, Southwell Rise. Decent enough. I mean, I think I'm continuing with a show that I'm probably going to finish out watching the first season. But, I don't know, it's not really resonating with me, and it's kind of slow, so slow for my taste. I don't think it's my style of TV show adapted from a comic. Maybe reading the comic will make it better, but to me it seems kind of slow and not really my style. I also had a chance to finish watching Boardwalk Empire season 4, so it's a lot of the tension between Nucky Thompson, the doctor guy, and Chalky White, so a lot of that those issues going there, and then the feds trying to come down on Nucky's operation. And then with the news of last week that HBO is going to have a new season or start a new series based on the movie Westworld that released in 1973, I had a chance to watch the 1973 movie Westworld this week. Overall, it was an okay episode or okay movie. It was actually decently well done, I guess, so not too bad of a movie. As far as the general vibe of it, as far as modern movies go, it's kind of a mix between Blade Runner and Total Recall. I think there was a third movie I was thinking of at the time that it kind of reminded me of, but it was basically your Blade Runner meets Total Recall. Not too much of your action, but a good mixture of who's human, who's not, kind of what goes wrong when the robots malfunction and how to fix the situation. So the whole company, the vacation company, had that whole vibe of the same recall from Total Recall. So that's kind of the vibe there. But then it had the pacing of Blade Runner, or at least the environment of Blade Runner, where you have people going into different worlds and kind of not knowing the difference between who's a human and who isn't a human. And then the general technology of the time, actually, I remember the third movie it reminded me of was THX 1138. So kind of that whole systematic overload, not overload, but a systematic procedural company trying to provide a service to the community. So I thought it was pretty well done. They did focus quite a bit on the Western world rather than all three after the namesake of the movie itself. They did end up going into the Roman world, I think. I forget if it was called that or something else, but for the time, I guess it was pretty good. It was only about an hour and a half long, so they could have probably hashed out the robots a little bit, or the androids a little bit more, and their technology, or provided more after the fact or before the fact, I guess, to hash it out. But overall, I thought it was a well-conceived movie. They didn't bog it down with unnecessary details. They had a good conflict, and they ended it reasonably well. So definitely worth a watch for a 1973 movie if you got 90 minutes to spare. So that's all there is for that. So with that, I'll jump into this week's TV show review. So for this week, I wanted to review the season 6 finale for Game of Thrones. It's season 6, episode 10, titled The Winds of Winter. So I'll jump into it, and then I have a special segment at the end as well for those of you who use an Android smartphone. So the episode aired in the United States on June 26, 2016. It has a runtime of 69 minutes. A summary of the episode is that Cersei stands trial for her crimes while Jaime celebrates victory with Walder Frey at the Twins. Davos confronts Jon about Melisandre's actions, and Littlefinger reveals his intentions to Sansa. Meanwhile, Bran continues his quest for knowledge in the far north as winter finally arrives. So, overall, a very, very good episode. It had a very good rating as well. I may have heard this, or I'm just dreaming and imagining all of it, but it was, I think, also the highest rated episode, or highest or most watched episode of Game of Thrones ever, but I don't have anything to back that up, but it was, I will say it was that good of an episode. It did have two bits of trivia. The first is that it's the longest episode since season 4, episode 10, The Children. That episode was at 66 minutes, so it beats that out by 3 minutes. And also, white ravens are sent when maesters decide that winter has officially arrived and are used to notify the lords of Westeros. So we get, there is that back, a bit of backstory about the white ravens. So we get that visual before we get the explanation by Sansa. So there is that as well. So with that, I'll jump right into the review. So far, I haven't really spoiled too much of the episode, but now at this, or at least the information I gave is probably a bit nonsensical until you have some context, but now going into the review, there will be some spoilers. So to start it off, I liked the vain conversion of Loras to the Seven, mostly because they went through the whole process of him admitting his guilt. They carved the sign of the Seven into his forehead. But in the end, we did have everyone in the Sept of Baelor go up in a big flame of fire. So in the end, it was all basically they got beat out by Cersei herself. We learned that why she was being calm and quiet and collected. She was actually going back to her form, and at the moment, it seems like she is being smart and playing to her strengths. I did also like that how they put that together to make the wildfire endgame to make allow Cersei herself to become queen of the realm, although it was at the cost of her son. And we do realize that, or we do see that indirectly the cause of her, the death of her son, because Tommen does commit suicide seeing the death of his wife and all the people, and basically coming to a conclusion himself that it is all his fault. I also found it interesting as far as the loss of Master Pycelle. So we've had him since the beginning of the show, and Qyburn uses the kids as a means of Pycelle's death. So it's one of those things where no one really sees it coming, because it's their own ego and arrogance to think that no harm will come of them. So it was a bit tragic, but not really a sad death, just because it was something that when it starts happening, you realize what's coming, especially when he's walking down the stairs and we don't know why. And the same thing with the guy who is crawling through the tunnels of underneath the Sept, and he sees all the barrels and there's a flame. So I kind of saw where they were going with it, but I wasn't sure exactly where they were, and I liked how that played out. The other part of the show that I liked was the return of a Stark to Winterfell. So we have Sansa Stark the official return. We have them walk into the castle, standing on the wall of the castle as well, so we know that they're officially taking it over, especially with the banners hanging over the side. And we also finally learned that winter has come, and we have her saying that. And we learned that when the White Ravens are sent out from the Citadel, that's the official calculations based on the weather people, I suppose, at the Citadel. I know I on my Instagram post about it, I had a couple of people explaining that. It was, the post was, to me, was kind of a joke. It was at that point where, why do the Citadel, the guys on the Citadel with their beach need to tell the Stark that winter has come when it's snowing? So it's kind of, it seemed kind of ironic that they were saying that they said winter has come when it's snowing in Winterfell. So they would, to me, it was just one of those things where, too funny that they would obviously know that winter has come when it started snowing. But I do like that we have the five seasons, or even the season one prophet saying by Ned Stark that winter is coming, to have it finally show up. And then we have Jon Snow becoming the new king of the North and having a new nickname of White Wolf because of his dire wolf ghost. So he's reluctant to take on the helm, and we see that Sansa's sitting at the side. We don't see too much pushback from Sansa, so I guess we know that she supports, and we based on her conversation with Littlefinger that she supports it. And then, of course, we have the good push from Lyanna Mormont that why not make them king of the North, and that Stark is a good person to lead them through the coming battle. On the flip side, we have Tyrion also becoming the Hand of the Queen. We see that Daenerys respects his opinion and that he is taking it seriously, and he's saying and probably doing everything according to how she wants, and that he's guiding her on a path to victory, ultimate victory, rather than short-term gains and settling for what she has at the moment. So I do, and then we have also the continuation of that where she finally begins sailing towards Westeros. So we see her ships. We have the dragons on the front of the ships, as well as her three dragons flying around as well. So that's where we conclude the season, and we know we have to prepare for the coming battle. Even though we don't know if it's going to be a twofold battle at the same time between Westeros and Cersei and Daenerys, as well as a fight with the White Walker. So we'll see how that works out. A bit of my own prediction would be that they're going to figure out a way to get with the White Walkers through the power of Bran, and they're going to take over Westeros, and now they have everybody in unity again. But that's just my unofficial speculation. We didn't have too much with Bran aside from him. Actually, we did have a bit of information. It was a short section, so we have him finding another tree to warg with. And we learn that Jon Snow is actually Ned Stark's nephew. We're still assuming that the father is Rhaegar. If that is the case, then he would be... If what I read online was true, that he would then become Daenerys's nephew as well, or sorry, cousin, something like that. So I forget how that story works. I think it's nephew cousins because she is the daughter of, or brother and sister, something like that. It was really weird, but they are, if Rhaegar is a father, then Jon now becomes related to Daenerys. But in any case, he is Ned's nephew and legitimate nephew at that. Or sorry, not illegitimate nephew still, but still a nephew to Ned Stark, and why he kept him under his wing. So that's all there is for that. So I also wanted, I kind of agree with the whole, the eunuch guy's time travel ability, where how he was able to get to Dorne and back in the time span of an hour with almost no explanation. So he made it to Dorne, I think it was, had the conversation with the ladies, maybe just Fire and Blood, and headed back out and made it to the ships, unless they picked him up on the way, which there was very little explanation for that, but I found that funny as well. So now for those of you who use an Android phone and you wanted a good Game of Thrones theme, especially if you like some of the visuals from this particular episode, I wanted to show a way to do just that. So What you'll need is three things. The first thing you'll need to do is install a third-party launcher called Action Launcher. You'll be installing version 3 so you can use the material design feature to theme your folders and status bar and apps menu to the colors of your wallpaper. If you want, you can also install an icon pack called Vintage Icon Pack. It does cost $1.99, so if you have a credit, you can do that, but it'll cost you a couple of bucks. This gives a very old-school medieval look to match the colors of the wallpapers for game, or the colors you see in Game of Thrones, so it kind of matches there. And then I'll have a link to the screenshots I took from the episode, so you can pick whichever one you want, but I did pick the wallpaper in the screenshot that you saw on Instagram of Tyrion kneeling at Daenerys' feet, so when he becomes her hand. So I kind of like that if the colors fit well with the icon pack and browns and all of that. So you can pick that one or any one in at least the gallery that I chose. When you do that, the next thing you're going to do is set the wallpaper. And then you're going to, or assuming you've already installed Action Launcher, you'll set your wallpaper to whichever one you downloaded. And then you'll go into settings and you'll go to quick theme and select wallpaper. So what Action Launcher will do is look at the colors in the wallpaper and select a couple of color combinations for the folders, app drawer, and status bar. So it kind of matches and you get that nice popping look on your home screen. You can adjust the colors if you want. So what I did is I set all the colors to dark tinted, dark muted, so they all are the same and it has a unified feel, but you can mix and match however you want. And then if you install the icon pack under display in the settings menu, you'll select the icon pack that you downloaded, so in this case, Vintage Icon Pack. And so now it will set all your icons to old school looking grainy icon pack, so it matches matches the look of the wallpapers any one of the wallpapers that you installed. So that's pretty much all there is for that, but you can always email me or tweet me and I can help you if you have further questions. So with that, I will jump right into this week's Star Wars profile. So with the bomb that went off the wildfire bomb that went off in under the Sept of Baylor, I thought I would do a related thing for Star Wars, and in this case, it is the Thought Bomb. So what this is, it's a power aligned with the dark side of the Force that is unleashed using the focused willpower of multiple Sith Lords. So unless a Sith Lord is singularly able to, or singularly really strong in the Force, this is something that will require more than one Sith Lord, and does require the dark side of the Force because it is a dark side power. And what it does is it annihilates the physical and ethereal parts of Force-sensitive beings within the blast radius. So depending on the size of the Thought Bomb, as long as you're a Force user, whether it's light side, neutral, or dark side, it will trap you within this bomb. And what it does is, once it goes off, is it does trap those Force users within an orb and creates a perpetual torment. And it remains as is until the orb is actually exploded using a physical device to make it further explode. It was originally created by uniting the minds of the connected Sith Lords into a single consciousness. So rather than remaining their unique identities, the Sith Lords become one being. And initially what they do is they hold hands to build a physical connection, and once the mental connection is made, they raise their hands forward and upwards towards the center of the orb, and now they're connected through the Force via to each other to bind their collective wills. What it does is it also distorts the reality within the immediate area, so it makes it really, really cold, so there is a physical world repercussion to it. The ambient temperature also drops significantly enough to form frost, so it is that cold. Light, heat, and sound are drawn into the orb itself, so it's kind of a black hole with an end that is closed off once it goes off. And in order to detonate the bomb, all it requires is a single clap, assuming it's from a Force user, to reverberate it and make it explode. So If you are outside the blast radius, depending on how big it is, you can feel the tremors in the ground. But if you are a force sensitive individual, it will trap you within that orb. So kind of like how we saw with the wildfire in the Septa Baylor, if you're in or much like any other bomb, really, if you're in a blast radius, you will get trapped. So that's all there is for that. So after the short break, I will jump right into this week's Relax Segment. Life of an Accounting Droid is brought to you by you in a couple of great and exciting ways. So if you want to help expand the show and the network, we do have a couple of Patreons set up to help you support the show and the network in whatever way you can. So let's say you love Life of an Accounting Droid and you want to see more posts on the feed, you want to have an Android app to quickly and easily get to the post and via different categories and things like that. Let's say you want to have a Q&A segment, then be sure to visit patreon.com/patelin01 to check out the various patron levels and what kind of things you can unlock by helping to support the show. You can also help support the network by visiting patreon.com/geekio. This helps our flagship show go ad-free. So let's say you just want to blaze through the show, listen to all of it uninterrupted. You can do things like that. Let's say you wanted a weekly D&D episode. Helping to contribute to the Geek.io Patreon can help do that as well, as well as adding special patron content, adding a new show, getting more con coverage, all of the great geeky, nerdy stuff that we all love. So that's patreon.com/geekio for all of that good stuff, as well as patreon.com/patelin01 to help the show expand as well. But that is all for that, so back to the show. So this week's You Can Relax segment, I wanted to talk about my reaction to changing my smartphone carrier. So for the past month or two, I've been looking for a better cell phone plan. I was with AT&T. The price was okay. I was getting a good rate for what lines I had and data I was getting. But I wanted to see if I could get something better, something a little bit more affordable, or maybe something with a little bit more, more data or more minutes or anything like that. And so I started looking into other plans. So Verizon came out to about the same. I didn't like Sprint because there's not much coverage in my area. And then I came to T-Mobile and realized that for the price I would pay with them, I could get more data, and then streaming media would not count against using data depending on the service I use. So their list included service I'd use, like Pandora, Amazon Video, YouTube, and all of that. So essentially, I was getting more data for the same price. And what I also learned was that if I brought I could bring my own devices, still have coverage, and I would save money by not having to buy a new device. So I made the switch. And actually, on that note, too, if I bought new devices with AT&T, it would actually come out to be a little bit more than what I would pay with T-Mobile and get less data at the same time. So I made the switch. It was actually very easy. I went into the store. I told them I had 4 lines. All our devices are unlocked, so they gave me new SIMs. They asked me about how much data I wanted, so I went with a 6-gig plan rather than the 10. Either one, the 10-gig plan per line would have come out to about the same price as AT&T, but since I don't use that much anyways, I went with the 6-gig plan, and it's 6 gigs per line, so in total I would get 24 gigs of data. With AT&T, I was only getting 10. Even with AT&T's promotion, I was only getting 15, so I was definitely getting more data, so that was a definite plus. I'm also saving money, so that's an even better benefit. And then it also makes it easier to travel internationally. So I'm going on vacation soon, so I wanted to make sure that worked. It's just because when I go internationally, I don't want to have to look for a Wi-Fi connection in the case I do need to check messages and emails and that sort of thing. So even though it's a 2G plan, depending on coverage for where I go internationally, it's good enough to the point where as long as it syncs, I'm happy and I don't have to worry about it. And then I don't have to worry about extra data. It still counts against the same plan. I can find Wi-Fi if I need it. And I still have the texting if I need to do that and calling and all of that. So I don't have to pay anything extra to make my phone work internationally. It just works. So that's all there is for that. So I'm not necessarily promoting T-Mobile. I do like their Un-carrier plans for international travel, data via, or their streaming media via Binge On and all of that. But my point in all of this is that looking around can yield unexpected benefits. So things like saving money, carrying over your device if another carrier has better prices, but maybe they charge the same or more for a new phone. But if you can take your new or your old phone to a new carrier and save some money until you can buy a new phone, then why not do it? So that's the biggest thing for me, is that I'm getting more data and I'm saving money at the same time with T-Mobile. I'm getting the same coverage in all the places I go to anyways when I was with AT&T, so it was definitely worth checking out. So that's all there is for that. So if you have any questions, comments, concerns, or anything like that, you can always email me at headphonesneil@yahoo.com. You can find me on Twitter at PatelN01. You can get links and past episodes and all of that good stuff at PatelN01.com. You can find this show or any show on the Geek.io network at geek-io.net. And look out in the next couple of days for the state of the podcast coming. At the moment, I'm expecting it to release on Monday, July 4th. There'll be a video version on YouTube, and then I'll also stick the audio version on the feed as well. So that's coming soon, in the next couple of days. Maybe Tuesday at the latest, but I am. It depends on how the weekend goes. Look out for updates to the Patreon. There's more levels coming, so easier to support and get access and things like that. And that's the bulk of it, really. Just an updated Patreon at the moment for the end of the first year of the podcast. So thank you for continuing to listen and sharing and hopefully leaving good ratings and all of that good stuff. But that is all for this particular episode. Thanks for tuning in, and until next time.